According to published reports, the Rio Grande Valley may have the worst rate of COVID hospitalization in the country. The mayor of Harlingen today on the Texas Standard.
Texas Standard is a production of KUT Austin, KERA North Texas, Houston Public Media, and Texas Public Radio in San Antonio, with support from Rand Group, software delivered as promised. No surprises.
I'm David Brown. Food banks across the Lone Star State brace for increased demand in August. We'll hear why. More on the abrupt shutdown of the Chinese consulate in Houston as the Trump administration ratchets up pressure with espionage claims and the app from a China-based company that some lawmakers are trying to ban. Tech expert Omar Gallego with details. Those stories and a whole lot more when the National News Show of Texas gets underway. And that happens right after this. No matter where you are, it's Texas Standard Time on this 23rd day of July 2020. I'm David Brown. Great to have you with us. At a time when pandemic fatigue may have set in after we've heard adjectives like unprecedented and nouns like hot spots used more times in a handful of months than any time in recent memory, this description from hospitals in the Rio Grande Valley is stunning. Quote, moving from bed to bed, medical workers wrapped in protective layers yell over blaring alarms. Nurses softly soothe dying patients. There is little time to grieve. A new patient fills an empty bed. Close quote. That unsettling and brief account from the New York Times today, which describes the region along the southern border of Texas as most likely the worst rate of COVID hospitalization in the country, 109 patients per 100,000 people, a 37% increase in hospital patients compared to last week, and 17 deaths per 100,000 residents in the last week alone. Chris Boswell is the mayor of Harlingen, Texas, a city that calls itself the unofficial capital of the Rio Grande Valley. Mayor Boswell, thanks for joining us on The Standard.
I'm glad to be here with you this morning. Good morning.
First, what is the situation as you've heard it when it comes to COVID-19 in Harlingen as of today? Are the number of cases, hospitalizations continuing to rise? Any signs of possible relief in the latest numbers you've seen?
They've gone up dramatically over the last 30 days. And what we look at particularly is the hospitalizations. And those have almost quadrupled in the last 30 days in the two hospitals in Harlingen. The four hospitals in Cameron County, two in Harlingen, two in Brownsville, and they have really been strained, but they're meeting the challenge. And a lot of that has to do with being able to access additional personnel and equipment resources. And the state has been very good about supporting Cameron County in that manner.
There are only so many beds, though, and you have a limited number of physical resources there. Are you having to ship patients out to other hospitals in other parts of the state or, in fact, the country at this juncture?
No, actually, Valley Baptist Medical Center has the most overall bed capacity of any of the hospitals in Cameron County of the four. It's significantly larger in terms of bed capacity. But because they don't operate with normally staffing that many beds, the real issue has been less an issue of real estate as it has been the personnel, nurses and doctors to be able to manage those beds. One of the things that fortunately is starting to happen now is that they are getting patients to the point where they can leave the hospital, but they need either to remain quarantined for a few more days, or they need some assistance with oxygen. So, for example, the city of Harlingen purchased 50 oxygen concentrators. The county purchased 150 to support the hospitals, so they can let people go home that will do okay on oxygen, so that they can free up beds in the hospital. And then we're still kind of trying to solve the issue of a step down facility. And we're working on that issue right now, and that would be to take people out of the hospital but keep them in a facility, a hotel, for example, where they could continue to convalesce and complete their quarantine period.
I see. In neighboring Hidalgo County, Judge Richard Cortez issued a shelter-in-place stay-at-home order to try to stem the outbreak of COVID-19 there. What about in Cameron County? What are you seeing there, and could you use something similar there as you see it?
Well, Judge Eddie Trevino, our county judge, issued a similar order a couple of weeks ago. For some reason, Judge Cortez's order is getting a lot of publicity, and what Judge Trevino did it isn't, but they're very similar in nature, you know, and they sort of dovetail with the governor's order as well.
Mayor Boswell, you've been in office, as I understand it, for more than 20 years. Have you experienced anything like this during your time in office?
No, absolutely not. I've been through a hurricane, a great recession, a big flood last summer, but this tops everything in terms of, you know, just the overall stress and just the workload that this requires. But what I'm doing is nothing compared to what those teams at the hospitals are doing. They are really confronting an enormous challenge. I'm proud to say that I believe that they are meeting that challenge, but not without a lot of blood, sweat, and tears.
Chris Boswell is mayor of Harlingen, Texas. Thanks so much for taking time to speak with us on the Texas Standard.
Thank you.
We've been asking listeners to send us their questions about COVID-19, and throughout the pandemic, we've been getting them answered by Dr. Fred Campbell. He's a doctor of internal medicine and associate professor of medicine at the Long School of Medicine, UT Health San Antonio. Dr. Campbell, welcome back to the Texas Standard.
It's always a pleasure to be here.
This first question was emailed to us by listener Hope Scott. Hope writes, I've tested positive for COVID-19 and have recovered. But what should I do to rid my body of any residual effects? I've started going outside and walking a mile, drinking hot tea with citrus, etc. But is there anything else I should be doing?
I believe the listener is doing really good things to try to recuperate, as I would from any infection similar to COVID-19. A gradual exercise schedule that isn't overly taxing is a really good way to get one's body back into good shape. The same thing goes with regaining any weight that one lost, making sure that one's using a balanced diet. I think those are the key issues at this particular time.
This question was sent to us through our website by an anonymous listener, Doctor. It says, I am teaching in person at a university this fall, and I'm concerned about my deaf students. Are clear face shields as effective as masks?
I did have to research this, and I do know that there are masks that are now available. There's one called the Hello Mask that is made of a component over the mouth and nose area that is transparent and allows the mouth to be visualized. So that would be an alternative to a face shield, which appears to be effective in filtering as well. Face shield is something that's typically used by health professionals in ICU settings where they're having to do procedures, and it is used with a second device like a mask to guarantee the best possible protection against COVID-19 transmission.
You call that the Hello Shield. Is there any risk of particles or particulates coming out of the bottom of the mask? Is that one of the shortcomings of this typical application?
This mask appears to be as protective as other similar masks that are sold. I have not seen data on whether transmission is reduced to the same extent as most face coverings that are being sold, mm-hmm. but it appears to be a fairly occlusive mask, and so I would say it's likely be effective.
Very interesting. Now, this question was sent to us by listener Larry Verner, who asks, in reference to N95 masks, does N95 refer to the material used in the mask or the particular design or both? Because Larry says that he has N95 masks in his garage from Home Depot and has had them for years. They're labeled for use against sanding dust and that sort of thing. What do you say to him?
Again, that's a very interesting question and one that I have researched. There are two basic types of N95 masks, one which is labeled for industrial use that protects people like carpenters and people who work in mills from developing acquisition of particles from those occupations, which can be dangerous. And then the health professional situation where the most important reason to wear an N95 would be to reduce the likelihood of picking up microbes from the air. Now, I can't tell anyone to use an industrial mask for healthcare purposes because, to my knowledge, they're not tested, cross-tested for healthcare purposes. But it's possible that they could be a significant protection against microbes.
Dr. Fred Campbell is a doctor of internal medicine at the Long School of Medicine, UT Health San Antonio, and he's been taking on questions about the pandemic. Now, if you have something you'd like to ask Dr. Campbell, you can look for us on Twitter, Facebook, or go to texasstandard.org/coronavirus, and you'll see a form there to submit your questions. Dr. Campbell, thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be here.
Joining us is our social media editor, Wells Dunbar. Hello, Wells.
Hello, David. We're hearing from our friends and listeners about what the coronavirus situation is like in their part of Texas. Earlier in the program, we heard about the dire situation in the Rio Grande Valley. Here's what we're hearing from some folks further up the coast in Corpus Christi. Via Facebook, Susan writes, I live in Corpus and it is a mess. I was exposed last week. I had a Zoom appointment with my doctor on Friday, but since I have no symptoms, she said to quarantine at home. Meanwhile, my supervisor at work is forcing me to go into the office, so today I feel compelled to get tested. Marilyn concurs that she's in Corpus and it's horrible, in her words. She says it's so out of control, I think they gave up on contact tracing. She goes on to talk about a friend of hers, a trainer at a big box pet store. She is ill with the virus. Corporate called and told her not to notify her clients and that they will not notify her clients. She goes on to say that thanks go out to the nurses who have come from other towns to help us. We need all the help we can get. Signs of the pandemic continuing to essentially rage out of control in many parts across Texas, David.
Go ahead.
I was just going to add in non-coronavirus news, Tesla coming to Texas. I know we're going to have some more about that in the news roundup and hearing plenty of reactions online as well.
Something else we're keeping an eye on is the possibility of heavy rainfall along the Texas Gulf Coast, especially from around the Rockport area moving north toward the Louisiana border. Let us know what's on your news radar. Look for Texas Standard on social media.
Support for Texas Standard comes from the Texas College Savings Plan, administered by the state of Texas. Families can save for tuition, room and board, books, and other qualified education expenses at eligible schools nationwide. Learn more at texascollegesavings.com.
This is the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. The Trump administration has ordered the Chinese consulate in Houston to close by 4 p.m. Friday. It's a stunning escalation of tensions between Washington and Beijing when relations are already frayed over issues including trade and COVID-19. Houston Public Media's Andrew Schneider says the move could have serious repercussions for Houston, which is caught in the middle and home to thousands of Chinese Americans.
From an office building on Houston's Montrose Boulevard, the Chinese consulate directs government, economic, and cultural activity across the southern U.S., from Texas to Florida. John Taylor with the University of Texas at San Antonio says it's a massive operation.
This is really uprooting a lot of people, and it's going to be disruptive to Houston and to the Texas economy because of the links that businesses and corporations have in China.
The People's Republic of China is Houston's second largest trading partner after Mexico. Census figures show more than 72,000 residents of Chinese origin live in Greater Houston. Federal authorities say alleged espionage led them to close the consulate. The move comes a day after two Chinese nationals were indicted for intellectual property theft in Washington state. Hans Stockton is with the University of St. Thomas.
it's no secret that there has been speculation for some time that the PRC consulate here in Houston might have been engaged in such activities. That's where the State Department needs to provide evidence to the American population, as well as the Chinese, I would imagine.
Attorney and former city council member Gordon Kwan says the Chinese community in Houston recently held a forum with the FBI to raise concerns about ongoing investigations of its members.
It has never been proven that these concerns were actual factual, although people have lost their jobs and been terminated in the interim.
Kwan is concerned that the consulate's shutdown will damage U.S.-Chinese relations. At the very least, it's likely to bring retaliation in the form of Beijing closing an American consulate. And nearer home, he worries it will fan discrimination.
Well, during this COVID-19 pandemic, it's been recorded over 2,100 episodes against Chinese, calling them names, harassing them.
Kwan says some episodes have happened here in Houston,
where people have attacked verbally Chinese Americans, have attacked their restaurants. So anything like this, we're concerned, would just add fuel to the fire.
Kwan says Chinese Americans are as loyal to this country as any other nationality. I'm Andrew Schneider in Houston.
Support for Coverage of Business comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider, proud to be on the job with essential workers who are out there working safe and keeping Texas strong. More at texasmutual.com/onthejob.
And you are listening to the Texas Standard. The Trump administration's aggressive stance on China has included not just challenges to the Beijing government, but threats against Chinese-owned tech companies that the president sees as potential national security risks. That includes the social media platform TikTok, which is owned by the Chinese firm ByteDance. Trump has threatened to ban TikTok in the U.S. in just this week. The U.S. House voted as part of a defense bill to ban use of the service on government devices. Tech expert Omar Gayaga is here with an update. Hello there, Omar.
Hey, David. Thanks for having me.
A lot of people use TikTok in the U.S., especially younger folks. What's the specific threat that the Trump administration sees from TikTok?
The president has suggested that TikTok has ties to the Chinese Communist Party and has suggested that he wants to do an outright ban of TikTok in the U.S., not just in the military or in government, but just banning it entirely from the U.S. His campaign has actually run ads on Facebook asking people to sign a petition to ban TikTok. So they are definitely putting the pressure on this company.
I've seen a lot of TikToks, and they don't look like they're necessarily national security risks, at least the ones that I've seen. What is it exactly that the administration sees as a security threat?
Yeah, we've had this discussion before about the company Huawei, which makes, you know, phones and hardware. In this case, it's a social media network, and the administration says that it's the app's ability to access material stored on the phone's clipboard that they feel is a danger from the Chinese government.
So, for example, what, passwords that might be cut and pasted or something along those lines? Or can it go even deeper into the phone?
Yeah, I mean, I imagine, you know, being able to access your photos, passwords, being able to access any kind of sensitive information that you might have cut and pasted and then, you know, use the app afterward.
What's the significance of TikTok as you look at the overall U.S. social media landscape? I know a lot of people think, you know, first of perhaps Facebook and Twitter. Where does TikTok sit?
It still lags pretty far behind Facebook, Instagram, YouTube in terms of views, but it has grown really quickly. It has gone from about 680 million active users in less than 2 years ago to 800 million. In the U.S., it's gone from about 20 million active users a month to 70 million. So it's just growing really quickly, and it's become very influential. I mean, it's become kind of an influence on music, popular music. You see the videos pop up virally. But what a lot of creators are doing is posting their videos on TikTok and other platforms. So it's not that you won't see them elsewhere. It's just that TikTok becomes a mechanism for a lot of these things to kind of hit big.
It seems like a lot of younger users are using TikTok, that's become a sort of app of choice for a lot of teenagers in particular. So what does it mean that the U.S. House has voted to ban TikTok on government phones and tablets? Are there a significant number of government phones and tablets that might actually have the app downloaded?
Well, since it's a social media app to kind of make funny videos, you wouldn't think so. But I think the significance is more symbolic that there have already been some companies that have banned it from use on their phones. And there's some question about whether this bill is even going to pass. It was passed by the House. There is a version in the Senate that is similar. But there are other things in the bill that could get it vetoed anyway, such as the White House threatening to veto it over a provision that would direct the Pentagon to rename military bases named after Confederate leaders. So this bill might not even pass.
Interesting. I want to ask you about ByteDance, the company. What's known about them, and do they have any recourse if some kind of full-on TikTok ban were to go in effect?
Yeah, this is one of those social media companies that kind of pivoted into something by accident. This was originally a music app, and it just sort of started taking off as a social media avenue to post videos. They have been thinking about things like changing their headquarters out of China. They have said they want to hire 10,000 people in the U.S. and maybe get American investors to take a majority stake in it. So they are definitely concerned about this. They have already been banned in India, which was one of their biggest markets, so they don't want that to happen in the U.S.
What about how China itself might respond if TikTok is banned in the U.S.? They offered quite a bit of pushback when Huawei was first mentioned as persona non grata or company non grata in the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, I think because TikTok is better known in the U.S., it's better known than Huawei among consumers. I think that there might be even more pushback than that. The concern is that they could retaliate against companies based with operations in China, and that includes everybody from Apple to Starbucks to Boeing to Nike. So there's a lot of companies doing business in China, and they could be hit with tariffs or all kinds of other measures.
Omar Gayaga can be found sharing his tech knowledge over at TechMinuteTexas.com. Omar, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thanks, David. I appreciate it.
Well, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton has been tapped to co-chair a new Lawyers for Trump coalition created by President Trump's campaign. The coalition has been created to emphasize the president's track record nominating federal judges while also bringing attention to what the campaign sees as Vice President Joe Biden's far-left agenda. Biden is up by one in Texas, according to a new poll. A closer look in about 20 minutes or so as the Texas Standard continues.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Raise Your Hand Texas, working to strengthen public education for all students. More information at raiseyourhandtexas.org. The future of Texas is in our public schools.
From the Texas Newsroom, I'm Joseph Leahy. Governor Greg Abbott's approval is sinking as nearly two-thirds of Texans feel the spread of COVID-19 is out of control in the state. That's according to a Quinnipiac poll out Wednesday. Analyst Tim Malloy says 48% of the 880 Texas voters surveyed in the last week approved of Abbott's performance, while 44% disapproved.
That's a 20-point swing to the negative from June. So clearly the reopening had resonance and made people very unhappy with the governor right now. Now, this is a number that may well change, but a 20-point drop is pretty ugly.
More than half of Texas voters said Abbott reopened the state's economy too quickly. 68% believed he should allow local officials to issue stay-at-home orders to address surging cases. Millions of Texans are struggling to afford housing and food amid the coronavirus pandemic, according to a new report from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Stacey Dean is with the progressive think tank. She says one-fifth of the Texas renters surveyed by the U.S. Census Bureau in the first week of July reported they were behind on rent.
Another way to look at that number is this is a very significant-sized group who are at risk of eviction, which, of course, is a whole nother level of crisis and cascades families into extraordinary difficulty. That's hard to come back from.
Researchers also found 13% of Texas households did not have enough to eat as of the beginning of the month. Tesla is setting up shop just east of Austin. CEO Elon Musk made the announcement on his company's earnings call yesterday.
We're also very excited to announce that we're going to be building our next gigafactory in Texas.
Texas will build the Tesla will build the billion-dollar electric car and truck plant on 2,000 acres near the Austin Bergstrom International Airport. It plans to manufacture its new pickup truck, semi-truck, and car models 3 and Y there. The company says it will eventually employ 5,000 full-time workers. Musk says initial construction work is already underway. And a Fort Bend County Sheriff's deputy has been fired after killing a fellow officer in May while they responded to a suspicious activity report at a house near Sugarland. Chadwick McRae shot at what he thought was a suspect while clearing the home, striking Caleb Rule. Rule was a Fort Bend County Precinct 4 deputy constable. The sheriff's office announced Wednesday McRae lost his job for violating their use of force policy. He was also indicted by a grand jury for criminal negligent homicide. I'm Joseph Leahy for the Texas Standard.
As communities grapple with the coronavirus pandemic, new developments unfold continuously. Catch up on the day's news from around the world and across Texas by listening to All Things Considered, weekday afternoons on your local NPR station.
33 minutes past the hour, Texas Standard Time. I'm David Brown. Earlier this month, the State Fair of Texas made headlines by canceling this fall's fair due to COVID-19. It's big news, to be sure. Over 2.5 million people went to the fair last year, and its cancellation is certainly a blow to vendors and employees. But as the Texas Standard's Michael Marks reports, it's just the latest letdown for an industry that's been hit hard by the coronavirus.
According to Courtney Barnwell, you can have two kinds of days when you work at a carnival.
So it could be a really super long day, or it can be just a long day. There's no in between, you know, it's just long or super long.
It's hard work, and Barnwell would know. She and her husband Chris technically live in Spring, just outside Houston, but they spend most of their time on the road, working for traveling carnivals. Her main job is selling tickets, which means spending hours in a cramped metal and plexiglass booth.
You know, it could be 105 degrees outside, with that sun beating on that, you know, plexiglass window right in your eyeball, and you just keep smiling. Sometimes you have to chant it to yourself, just keep smiling.
Still, Barnwell would love nothing more right now than a long day in a hot booth. But since the pandemic started, that hasn't been an option.
We see all of our little fairs that we might have been going to just slowly going, nope. Canceling. You know, I'm looking at my computer every day and I'm like, another one canceled.
Carnivals are among the many industries that have been turned completely upside down by the coronavirus. Barnwell counts herself as lucky. Even though she's not working, she was approved for unemployment benefits and she and her husband own the RV they live in. Usually, carnivals provide reliable work, and now some of the people who work them year in and year out find themselves having trouble making ends meet.
I've never heard of a carnival employee ever been unemployed. It was unheard of. I've said that for years, and everybody else has said the same thing. You know, you never can get unemployed in the carnival business. Well, we thought we were right, but we were wrong, because as of March 8, 2020, I have been unemployed since then.
That's Ricky Moore. He owns and operates Moore's Greater Shows, a carnival that's been in his family since 1926. At the beginning of March, his carnival had just finished at the Live Oak County Fair in South Texas and was heading to its next gig, the Ingleside Roundup Days near Corpus Christi.
And as we moved over there and got the last truck there, 5 minutes later they said the event's been canceled due to the coronavirus.
He packed up all the rides and games, dismissed his workers, and went back home. Since then, his carnival's been sitting on the 6 acres he owns in Lyford, just north of Harlingen.
Yeah, it's very sad to look in your yard and you see your whole livelihood in your backyard just sitting there.
Moore is from Texas, but usually this time of year, he's putting on a show in Kansas or Nebraska. But with so much uncertainty on where and when carnivals can operate, not to mention customers' lack of disposable income, it's usually not worth it for people like Moore to hit the road. That doesn't mean some carnivals aren't trying, though. John Hanchin is from Austin and owns the Mighty Thomas Carnival. When we spoke, he was in Bismarck, North Dakota, setting up for a carnival with 55 employees.
But we actually have more labor than we need right now. We're struggling to keep earning enough funds to pay them, but they're good people.
The carnival usually works 50 events a year. They follow I-35 from Laredo all the way up to Duluth, Minnesota. But this year, Hanshin has only worked 5 events. The fairs remaining on his schedule will be smaller than normal to accommodate social distancing. All the employees wear masks. Customers have their temperature taken before being admitted to the carnival. Rides and games are sanitized between each use. And he left behind some attractions that couldn't be made safe, like the House of Mirrors.
Where, you know, you walk through and then it could be a mirror or it could be an opening, you know, and you put your hands out in front of you and you make this left turn, the right turn, and eventually you get through the maze. And, you know, I just couldn't imagine how to keep it clean.
Hanshin's not sure he'll make enough to cover his expenses or even what the future of his business looks like.
It's really unknown what's going to happen after this year. And it's really unknown what's going to happen next week, as far as that goes, because we could be closed up at any time.
Staying home would have been easier, he said. But for fairs that do plan to go on, for families who still want to ride the rides, for employees who need the work, Hanshin feels like he's got to try to put on a show. For the Texas Standard, I'm Michael Marks.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Texas CASA, advocating for a safe and positive future for all Texas children in the child protection system. Volunteer information at becomeacasa.org. Every child has a chance. It's you. Support for Texas Standard comes from Texas Oncology, sharing that regular screenings like mammograms and colonoscopies are essential preventative appointments. Early detection of cancer often leads to better outcomes. More at texasoncology.com.
It's the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. The boots are stunning. They're made of leather and dyed gold. The heels are embellished with rivets, a perfect complement to her cream-colored guitar. Perfect for our project From Heel to Toe, wherein Texans talk about their life journeys and the boots that got them to where they are.
My name is Gina Chavez. I'm a bilingual musician, and I also work part-time for an incredible organization called Every Texan. I'm semi-ashamed to admit my first pair of cowboy boots I actually purchased in Nashville. They're gonna come get me for that, I know. I never was somebody that was into fashion, and you know, it's fun to see how especially fans react when you put effort into how you look, and so those gold boots are amazing. So especially growing up here in Austin, right, I cut my teeth as a songwriter on the open mic scene, and of course there's all these incredible musicians, and I was like, I want people to come out because I'm a great musician, not because I'm a pretty girl, right? But then you also realize that it's a show, you know, it's a performance, and if I have the opportunity to go see amazing musician A, who has put nothing into what they're wearing, or amazing musician B, who has a whole aesthetic and there's a visual aspect, then I'm probably gonna go watch the person that's put some time and effort into it. I've got a new record out. It's called La Caimanda, and kind of about a woman coming into her power. My hands are tied, your hands are too. Now we don't know where to go, don't know what to do. You know, 2020 is a year of so many meaningful landmarks in our history. You know, not only is this marking the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall riots, which basically sparked the modern gay rights movement, it's also the centennial of women's suffrage. You know, and I think that I've definitely taken for granted the fact that I've grown up in a world where I can go vote. And that's not something that is battled, right? And I came out when I was 24, just graduated from the University of Texas at Austin, but was still involved in the Catholic Center there. And it was there that I met my wife. And as you can probably imagine, you know, falling in love kind of at that college age in a Catholic environment, you know, we weren't able to have a relationship. And anyway, we were together for 12 years and then we got married. And, you know, I just remember Jody and I both being like, wow, we can actually get married in Texas. Like, we never thought that would happen, ever. And so let's do it, you know. And yeah, you know, we stand on the shoulders of giants and of people who have given their lives for us to be able to have the rights that we have. The song Ella, it says, en la calle corremos peligro, en la casa nos matan también. Y si armamos valor para decirlo, hasta la iglesia se calla también. Pero no tenemos tiempo que perder. Fueron muchas las que lucharon ayer. Por las que están y las que vendrán, no nos rendimos. You know, and so that part that just says, like, there's so many that have come before us, there's so many that are coming. We have to speak up now, you know, and I love that our country is really reckoning with white privilege right now. And the thing that we need to do is make sure that that is not a trend. Make sure that that is not a moment, that it's a movement that continues until the changes are made. En contra de eso y más, nunca se rindió. Thank you all so much for joining me. My name is Gina Chavez. I am an Austin musician, bilingual singer-songwriter, and you have been listening to The Texas Standard. Toda la historia callando una verdad,
hemos tenido el poder. Check out Gina's golden boots over at texasstandard.org. Where have your boots taken you? We want to hear your story. Email us, texasstandard@kut.org. Make sure you write boots in the subject line. With millions of people out of work in this pandemic, food banks have seen a major surge in demand since March. But August is set to be one of the busiest months yet, and that worries food bank operators. Texas Public Radio's Paul Flab reports that two big changes have food banks bracing for the next few months.
At the San Antonio Food Bank, a dozen National Guard members pack baked goods donated from a local grocer. They stack the boxes on two quickly growing pallets. The Guard does this every weekday morning in San Antonio. In the afternoons, they often distribute the food in triple-digit temperatures. Other Guard members working on the Texas-Mexico border in Presidio were packing food boxes into trunks and truck beds of hundreds of hungry people's vehicles. Texas's 21 food banks struggle to find volunteers. People are scared to contract COVID. The National Guard has been placed in about half the state's food banks to offset that shortage. The Guard replaced nearly all the volunteers for the West Texas Food Bank, says Chief Program Officer Kelly Durden.
Yeah, the Guard has been amazing. We will have to go back to the drawing board when we lose them and see what we're going to do with volunteers. The last 4 months have been really challenging, but going forward the next 30 to 50 days, it's going to be even more challenging.
More challenging because not only is the National Guard departing soon, but federal unemployment funds are scheduled to end, which could push the demand for food banks even more. Many are pushing to extend the extra federal funding.
I want to know what jobs he thinks are available.
A protest organizer speaks to a small group gathered in Austin earlier this month. These people want to extend the $600 unemployment.
It is essential that we get the pandemic unemployment relief passed.
In the crowd, Mark McKim says he was laid off as a substitute teacher and hasn't been able to find work.
Because it's not that I haven't been trying. I've applied to over 25 jobs and I haven't been able to get any of them, even after interviewing for a couple and, you know, didn't get it.
McKim says he'll be turning to food banks and pantries for help.
Many of those workers are now living on 65% of what they used to make pre-COVID to keep their household afloat.
Eric Cooper runs the San Antonio Food Bank. His operation saw 10,000 families show up to a single distribution in April. Cooper expects another spike in coming weeks.
That's going to mean they're going to be looking for ways to make up that shortfall. And I would foresee longer lines at our distributions.
Food banks in this state are already giving away twice the amount they usually do. According to Celia Cole with Feeding Texas, the state's food banks are feeding 390,000 families weekly.
There have been a couple of instances recently where, due to some of the sort of volunteer issues we talked about, labor challenges, just haven't been able to get everyone through the line quick enough. And so we had to shut down before meeting the entire need.
Cole is frustrated that there hasn't been more federal help. She'd much prefer Congress put more money in people's pockets so they can wait in the checkout line instead of a food line. I'm Paul Flav in San Antonio.
Well, the largest outbreak of COVID-19 in a federal prison is in Fort Worth. The Bureau of Prisons confirms that more than 500 female inmates at the Carswell Federal Medical Prison have tested positive for the coronavirus. It's one of many stories we continue to track here on the Texas Standard, coming up on 49 minutes past the hour.
Support comes from Texas Children's Hospital, focused on outcomes and care, and providing treatment to kids in the Lone Star State and beyond for more than 60 years. Texas Children's Hospital, personalized care for every child. More at texaschildrens.org.
You got to tune to the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. A new Quinnipiac poll has former Vice President Joe Biden up 1 point over President Donald Trump in Texas, 45% to 44%. This leading many on social media to ponder, could Texas in fact be in play come November? And what might all this mean for down ballot races? In fact, it was just last Friday that the Cook Political Report shifted projections of 20 U.S. House races to make them more favorable toward Democrats. Four of these seats are in Texas. For a deeper dive on what all this could mean come Election Day, we're joined by the Texas Tribune's D.C. Bureau Chief, Abby Livingston. Abby, welcome back to the Texas Standard.
Thanks so much for having me.
Let's rewind back to Friday and the Cook Political Report, where they changed four Texas House seats to either toss-up or likely Republican. So where's the silver lining here for Democrats? Just the fact these seats were solidly Republican in the past?
Well, the silver lining is that this is a Texas map that was drawn in 2011, 2012 that had one competitive seat, and that is it, out of 36 congressional seat, U.S. House seats. And so now Cook is saying that there are now 11 seats that are no longer safe, and they are all generally in Republican areas. It's a significant thing. And one of the things is some of these seats, three of them are located in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, very suburban, and they may never flip. But it may cost money for Republicans to save those seats. And that's money that could be going elsewhere, either to incumbents who are in trouble or places they could have gone on offense in another cycle that's not quite so bad.
It's important, and I think we should probably stress that we're talking about, at least in these three seats, suburban seats, and that has been seen as a battleground since at least 2018. What's happening there? Is this an anti-Trump push? Is this shifting demographics? Something else going on some other level in Texas politics? How do you see it?
Well, you know, sources I talk to, I'll talk to a candidate or a strategist and say, you know, it's so hard for me to think about this district being in play. It was represented by Congressman X for 20 years, who's Republican. Everybody knows this is a Republican area, and they say this is not the same district you're thinking of. New people have moved in. So there's that. I also think if not for Trump, we would not be having this conversation. While Trump had strength in the Rust Belt on election night 2016, he underperformed in Texas. And I think over time, maps can kind of loosen up over the decade. And I think part of it is that happening. People move around, basically, and it's not the intent of the lines of those districts. And but I also think Trump has swiftly moved in this toward the Democrats.
Interesting. So you think this has a lot more to do with Trump himself as a polarizing figure, it sounds like. I want to go back to that Quinnipiac poll that has Biden over Trump by 1 point. Does that have significance for down ballot races? Does 1 point really matter? How significant do you see that?
Well, 1 point's basically the margin of error, so we can just assume it's a tie. You know, we will see what kind of resources are spent in the state on the Democratic or Republican side. It absolutely affects down ballot. Hillary Clinton lost the state by 9 points, which was actually overperforming in history. And it basically indicated that two seats, one in Houston, one in Dallas, were in play. So I absolutely think that there's a thing of coattails, and it's making Republicans very nervous.
But of course, you've been covering Texas politics for a while now. The X factor here, it seems to me, has got to be the pandemic, because there are so many questions about who will actually be turning out at the polls, how the vote will be counted, whether or not we'll see mail-in ballots in November. It seems like there are lots of wild cards just tied to the pandemic itself.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to remember that. I like to look to history. I like to look at patterns to try to figure out where things are going. But I'm also being very careful about that because there are unknowns. It's very real. Candidates could be sitting in their living rooms on election day trying to figure out how to campaign effectively. And so it has upended every aspect of the American political campaign at every level. It's something where people who obsess about American politics like I do may not see a lot of strange developments coming on election night.
Abby Livingston is DC Bureau Chief for the Texas Tribune. Abby, thanks again.
Thanks for having me.
And you are listening to the Texas Standard. Let's check in once again with our social media editor, Wells Dunbar, on this Thursday. What are you seeing out there, Wells?
Howdy, David. Well, as we've been hearing on today's show, Tesla is coming to Texas, the Austin region specifically, as the electric car maker announces plans to invest in the region east of Austin with a $1 billion factory that will make cars, including Tesla's new Cybertruck, and employ thousands of people. It's not free exactly. $60-plus million in property tax abatements from the Del Valle School District in Travis County, sweetening the deal for Tesla. It's prompted a lot of talk online, and for a revealing look at what Austinites are thinking about it, there's a thread on r/Austin, the Austin page of social media site Reddit. One of the top comments there asks, has anyone been on the Colorado River back there where the site is slated, where the plant is slated? It's a mess. It needs Mars-level terraforming to be reclaimed, and out of nowhere, here comes the one company on Earth with the will to do it. In the public meeting, Tesla said part of the reason they wanted the site was because of the river access and to improve it for the public, and that's just the river. The whole area has been forgotten. The past decade of boom times for Travis County hit everywhere but Del Valle. So it should be interesting to see the impact that it will have. Many people applauding the growth and the jobs specifically that it can create. Another popular comment on that thread, though, devil's advocate, it says, but people will pay in the long term with property taxes. The commenter also goes on to say, I don't believe there will be a ton of immediate amenities around the plant, probably cafes and a couple restaurants and gas stations. And the top question on that Reddit thread pondering Tesla's move to Texas, what will it do to property values in that neighboring region and Austin's specifically? You know, obviously Austin, a big boom town, a big growth story across the state and the nation. So Tesla's move here sort of exacerbating that, if you will. Obviously a big business story there, David.
Yes, it is. In fact, there's a very interesting piece in the Austin American Statesman today. I noticed Tesla by the numbers. It's definitely worth checking out.
Mm-hmm. You know, one other thing coming up here, I'm seeing a lot of chatter about, hard to believe, but baseball is going to be back here pretty soon. The Astros season opener tomorrow against Seattle, the Rangers at home versus the Rockies as well. You know, one hilarious thing I saw trolling Twitter right now, I think on Fox Sports, they're going to have digital fans in the stands there because obviously you can't have anyone in there, you know, specifically with social distancing and stuff. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Another story we're keeping an eye on a little more seriously, the looming discussion in Congress over what to do with this deadline for benefits that extra $600 in unemployment assistance expiring at the end of the month, the 31st. Lots of chatter there in D.C. about what may take its place, whether or not we're going to see another round of stimulus funding go out to American citizens. A lot to keep an eye on, it seems, David.
In fact, there are a lot of eyes on the skies out there along the Texas Gulf Coast as some pretty wet weather moves into the area. Some projections that by the end of the weekend, a lot of the flooding, flash flooding in Brazoria, Galveston, Chambers, and southeastern Harris counties could resemble what we saw back in May of 2019 in Sugar Land and Kingwood. Of course, keep it right here for the very latest in developments. We're out of time for the broadcast, but we hope you'll join us again tomorrow.
Philanthropic support for Texas Standard comes from Casey and Scott O'Hare. The Winkler Family Foundation, Lynn Dobson and Greg Waldridge, Adrian Killam, the George Huntington Family, and the Cynthia and George Mitchell Foundation.